the show that goes there. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Today we're going to be doing a week in review, and oh my God, week describes some of our headlines. We'll go everywhere from the southern border to the halls of the House of Representatives to Sarah Sanders' going away party that resembles probably something out of the movie Hairspray. We'll get through all of that today and more as we cover the big stories of the week. Before I do all of that, brief introductions are in line. My name, Shaggy Jenkins, critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal insane, and joined online by the guy from the Windy City who this week, let's just be honest, I'm surprised he's showing up here sober. Please welcome from the recently legalized state of Illinois, Chicago's very own radio superstar, Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. Now, I got to take umbrage with the comment you just made, Shaggy. You know, my thing has always been abiding in alcohol. I never smoked weed. I never did. I had friends who smoked, and that was their vice. My vice was drinking. And when it came to weed, look, I would get contact highs, but I didn't inhale.
Oh, you did what we like to call the Clinton School of Smoking.
Yeah. You want to talk about that? Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, there you go. The thing is that this week, Illinois became the first to go full legalization, recreational, from adults only. And that is kind of a major thing because me in the state of Hawaii, we were the first back in 1996 to go for medical usage. And as much as I always love to pick on Chicago about the weather and stuff like that, oh, I imagine people ain't going to be minding the weather too soon.
No, they'll be all nice and toasty and in their minds and their feelings and probably very, very hungry from munching and having all types of foods. So, no, it will be a great thing. Probably shut up a lot of businesses for food restaurants because, you know, you got to figure, hey, I'm starving, man. And then all of a sudden, you know, got somebody coming and ordering a couple of pizzas.
Yeah, a couple of pizzas, some hot dogs on the side. And do not forget, pepperoni pizzas, french fries, and hot dog is a complete meal.
Yes, it is.
Speaking of things that you have to be high to kind of wonder about, I gotta say, the latest news out of the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., Chris, does have me asking the question, who got high and thought this wasn't going to happen? Back in May, Robert Mueller came forward and said, hey, look, I'm just going to tell you, the report says everything. I'm not going to say nothing. I don't care if you subpoena me. The report says everything. And for the most part, even here on this show, we were just like, aw, huh? But I guess maybe the old peace pipe came out because it looks like not once, but twice in open sessions, Mueller will be testifying in front of the House about the content of his report. Chris, this could be a game-changing moment, couldn't it?
Well, of course it is. I think that going back in May when Special Counselor Robert Mueller made his, what we thought, his last appearance in the public eye when he made his comments, what he mentioned really was it's up to Congress to take care of this. I gave my report 2 years in the making. I'm going to go back where we thought to, you know, the private sector, and this is it. We thought it was going to be a swan song. Maybe it was code for saying not only Congress, but I will testify in front of Congress. We didn't get that part of the story yet, but he seems to be, for me, Robert Mueller, a man of integrity. And I think like anything else, when it's out of your hands, and put in the hands of the others who have power to help this thing go through, to have more investigations, I think obviously his voice is needed to hear it from him of what happened during his two-year investigation.
This is the one thing I kind of want to point out because me and you, we're old school guys. We remember things like, oh, and here's the funny thing for you. This week will be the last run of our only island newspaper's weekend edition. Because of the lack of funds in print publication, our Maui News will now not do a Sunday news release. And guys like me and you, we grew up with the Sunday paper. That's where you got the meaty, the investigative story.
Right.
But society has changed since the time of our youth. And a lot of people no longer, especially when the Mueller report came out, and I'm going to say this kind of flippantly, it was only 400 pages long.
Right.
A lot of people didn't take time to read it. So this is the thing that's kind of got me confused. Did the Democrats want Robert Mueller's testimony, not just the Mueller report, but his testimony, so that Americans would be forced to listen to the details of his report versus being, you know, well, go read it. It's out there. Here's the PDFs. Here's the links. Do your own research and get back to us, because it's kind of important for our government. Is this a play for Democrats to make sure everybody knows the depth of what happens?
It's a very strong play. I think you just nailed on the head right there with the hammer. What happens, like you just said before, in today's society, everything is rushed. Everything is quick. Social media and the like. And nobody, and not saying for everybody, but just the standpoint of society, really takes time out to sit down and read extensively in long form. We get short form. We get microwave. We don't get the back in the day when your mother or father, whoever, cooked you a meal on the stove and in the oven. That took time. We didn't pop in the microwave back in the day. So we looked at that mentality. Everything's quick. So it would be a great masterstroke for the Democrats to bring forward Robert Mueller in this situation to talk extensively about that. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well, the thing is that back in the last time that we had the scandal of this nature, Watergate, the American public was a little bit differently conditioned. So every single morning during the second half of the Watergate scandal, the first half, most papers kind of ignored it until late night host and news reporters and investigators got deeper and deeper into the story. But at the second half, everybody woke up the next morning and wanted to read the transcripts of the testimony from the day before. And this included things like G. Gordon Liddy's testifying and all of that. Point being, it was a much more in-tuned with our democracy society back then. It seems like now, basically, if you come out and say it, or in the case of President Trump, if you come out and tweet it, that's a lot more effective than actually doing government and reporting the way that we have done it before. Am I wrong here?
No, you're right. Trump said a few years ago, being on The View, that he loves to tweet because that way he can get all his followers, all his people, and talk about certain events, and that will cover the scam or the gamut of a scan of how many people would follow him on Twitter. So to that point, he's correct. It goes for all of us by Twitter accounts. So saying that, going back to the whole thing of getting your message across is short-term versus long-term. And if you do it in a short-term form, you may not get the meat, like I said before in the conversation with the Sunday papers, or the crux of the story of the edition itself. Again, like you said before, you talk about what, 448 redacted pages we got. Okay, that's a long time. Nobody has that time. But if you bring forth the person who did the investigation, it has more validity to it. It has more strength behind it, because here was the man who spearheaded the investigation.
Yeah, it's just like that book, Go the F to Sleep. You can read the book, but there's nothing like Samuel L. Jackson reading the book to you.
That's different. Yeah.
It gives it life. And this is the thing, when it comes to Mueller and his whole report, the thing that has been strangling the life out of him has been his silence. For the most part, this whole time that Mueller has been out there saying, read the report, and people refuse to read the report, almost on a clockwork type schedule, Donald Trump has been calling his buddies up at either Fox and Friends or the Fox Business News, and having that direct pipeline to the American public with his narrative. So as we transition from these two stories, do you think House Democrats right now are trying to level the playing field with how Fox News and One American Network has now used Donald Trump and allowed Donald Trump to take over their networks to spread his own message unchecked. Is this kind of their defense against that?
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, you can't give this person too much power. The power of the presidency is what it is. But when you abuse the powers, which is what the president has done, when you take it upon yourself to believe you're Teflon and nothing will stick to you because you don't believe you're above the law, when you comport yourself in that manner, it's going to have pushback. And so the only way to do that is to counterbalance with something else. So you mentioned before about Fox News and Friends. Fox and Friends, they have these positions where he comes on the show and he's able to freeform. I told you, you want to get the best stuff out of Trump, always off teleprompter. Off teleprompter Trump is the real guy. So when he's on, really not much pressure as far as he's concerned, he can go off the script and be himself, whatever that is, and then just go and expound upon certain things without being questioned or challenged. And then, Sean Hannity, of course, in his ear, the Trump whisperer. So it's a very comfortable place to be if you're Trump. But outside of that, fake news, the media is evil, and everything else. So you create this narrative on two sides. For him, meaning Trump, the Fox News are wearing the halos, and the fake news, quote-unquote, people are the demons. So it's an interesting dichotomy how people visualize either side when it comes to, say, for example, Fox News and other forms of media.
Now, this latest interview that Donald Trump did with Maria, I think it's, Bartiromo, he did an interview with her, and here's the thing. I am not a fan of Fox News nor Fox Business News, but because, just like everybody else, I love a good train wreck, I tuned in to see the president's interview. Chris, I almost want to say that the term train wreck is actually a polite term for what happened to poor Marie. The reason why is Maria was trying to ask the president questions, and he had this, what would you call it? Like this free-flowing, I hate this enemy, I'm going to say this weird conspiratorial thing. Oh, by the way, Joe Biden has some sort of weird health problem that I am going to keep bringing up, which, by the way, is unverified, unproven, and fake. But because I'm on Fox News, I'm going to go. Now, Maria kept trying to ask him questions, and he just kept steamrolling him. Are we seeing the president now unraveling in front of us with his messaging?
I think it's been unraveling for a while now. We're just seeing, of course, bits and pieces and certain nuggets of misinformation when it comes to the president. I mean, let's go back to 2016, who was running for the presidency, and even as current as his appearance in Florida. And you could compare it back to back. He said the exact same things in 2016. They said in 2019, crooked Hillary, lock her up, all these other things. Well, okay, let's go with Hillary Clinton. Sir, you have the job. Okay, why is she still in your purview? I haven't heard about Hillary Clinton in the news, have you? We have not. So why is she still relevant from the standpoint of Trump? It's the old bullet points. So someone who's following Trump, if they don't have too many blinders on, okay, with all due respect, Mr. President, that was 2016. What about 2019? What kind of things would be different? I don't understand how the media compared it back to back. I went back and watched the coverage of 2016 and 2019, and what I got out of it was the same speech. But that's me. Yeah. But the fact remains is I personally did not hear anything new that Trump would do going into his 2020 campaign. I didn't hear that one new thing at all. But again, if you're stuck on the script, because creative feedback in 2016, because that type of vernacular, not going to go anywhere. And of course, when you talk about him mentioned about Joe Biden's health, again, not substantiated in the press or anything is going to be a counterattack with, you're fishing. You're trying to find something because that's how Mr. Trump rolls. He'll find some way to attack you personally and not deal with fact.
The facts that he tried to bring up were kind of way out there. Look, I want to go through these point for point because the minute that Trump got on the phone with Maria Bartiromo, he basically started off with, you know, the FBI spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign. If you're running in 2020, why is it that the first thing that you do is attack one of the branches of government that you're supposed to work along with?
Because you've done it before. Let's go back to Helsinki. The FBI, the CIA, he strongly went against them, his own intel, to side with President Putin's, of Russia's intel. So he's already shown his disdain for the FBI or anything that deals with the government, because he already showed that already. This is nothing new. He doesn't care for the FBI. They're investigating me. Same verse, you know, same song, you know, different lyric.
Oh, this is the one that I love, though, because everybody knows that Trump loves to tell people exactly how the United States is being treated poorly by people. And this one quote, Chris, it blew my mind because the world doesn't work like that. But this is one part. He goes, Donald Trump, quote, Europe treats us worse than China. Okay, bold statement, but wait. I feel like Billy Mays at this point. But wait, it gets worse. Quote, Europe is, you know, look, I come from Europe. You come from Europe. Okay, you're of the European nations. European nations, and here's the fun part, ready? European nations were set up in order to take advantage of the United States. Now, I checked history books, and fun fact, Chris, Europe nations were set up before the United States existed. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. But think about people who heard that statement and never questioned it. And see, that's what's scary to me, to give out just run-of-the-mill facts that you can't back up, but it's scarier for the viewer or listener of Fox News, or this situation, Fox Business, and not question anything you say.
Well, with Fox Business, they are not a news channel. They're a financial channel. And Maria Bartiromo, she kept trying to steer the conversation to questions that people legitimately have about the latest economic strategy out of the White House,
right,
which is, Mr. President, do you actually understand who pays the tariff? And is it wise to use tariffs against Iran, China, Russia, Japan, threaten Europe, Mexico, and Canada when our GDP is shrinking? She tried to steer the conversation into that, and he went straight on into, well, I'm from Europe. Fun fact, he's actually from Queens. Is Queens in Europe? Did I miss a memo here?
I must have missed the same memo because I had no idea. But if it is, now I'm enlightened.
Yeah, I mean, do you know how gentrified you got to be when part of your city belongs to another whole continent? That is some gentrification AF.
Just think about the real estate rates. If that's the case, oh my God.
Now, the thing is, too, is like he used this finally to attack on the Fox Business Channel. He finally wrapped up the conversation about something financial, much to the relief of Bartiromo. He started talking about the Federal Reserve. And here's the thing. The Federal Reserve is independent of the White House. It is basically an independent federal agency that controls our monetary system. Trump doesn't like the whole independent part. And on Fox News, or Fox Business News, I should say, he basically used this unfettered access to his base to slam and skew, once again, the lines between the White House and the Federal Reserve. With all of these things that he brought up, though, because it was like a shotgun blast of Trumpism, exactly what was this interview supposed to accomplish, Chris?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. When you're on there as the president, obviously, and the weight that he carries, responsibilities and everything else, you would think that being on, for example, Fox Business, he has something enlightening to say about business, about taxes, about anything that conceals with business or deals with that. But he did not. Like I said before, he gets off script very easily because he feels comfortable when he's off script, but he doesn't stay to the plan. If you're on Fox Business, and talk about business. Especially since he's the leader of the free world, everything he says has merit or weight to it, and you get nothing. And so, to me, it must be very frustrating for Maria doing this interview, and you can't get the president on track because he won't talk about the FBI investigating him and Joe Biden and everything else. I mean, for what it's worth, even if you're a person that obviously works for Fox and get your check from Fox, it had to be a frustrating point as a broadcaster and not able to steer the president back on track for the topic about business.
You know, the thing is, too, is like at the end of it, he did start yelling very loudly when the conversation turned to Mueller about how Mueller, quote, terminated the emails. He terminated them. They're gone. And that's illegal. That's a crime. Nobody knows which emails he's talking about. He didn't have any context for this information. He just started yelling and screaming. And Chris, I'm going to bring up an interesting theory because this goes to our next story. I think Trump is having to do all these media appearances right now because his power player for the news media itself, Kellyanne Conway, has kind of been benched as of lately and may actually be approaching the bench in the House. Is that right?
Yes. And here's the thing. We look at the domino effect. We'll talk about this later on in the program. You see Sarah Sanders stepping down from the White House press secretary position and everything now considering this a topic with Kellyanne Conway. The keepers at the gate are now being taken away one by one by one. And if you're the president, you will have some concerns about that. The last thing you need is to your main people, even though they could be replaced, the loyalty that the person had before, I mean, said volumes to President Trump. So now they're being questioned or now they're leaving. It would make you feel different. It would make you feel, okay, if I'm going to replace, for example, Sarah Sanders, who's next? I got a problem with Kellyanne Conway. I have other people coming against me. So as the president, you would feel that your shield of people around you is whittling away bit by bit. You would feel concerned.
Yeah, and the thing is that Kellyanne Conway should actually feel concerned because this is the first time in a very, 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 very long time, I think since the Teapot Dome scandal itself, that Congress has had to use the subpoena power against somebody in violation of the Hatch Act. Am I correct on that?
I believe you're correct, yes.
Yeah, well, the reason that this is so important is because Kellyanne Conway uses her official position as a mouthpiece for the Team Trump, that whole campaign, constant campaign part of the White House that is so loyal to itself. It's Sarah Sanders, somebody that we'll talk about coming up, actually tells people either they're Team Trump or they're not here. And that's kind of scary. But Conway, clearly the cheerleader of Team Trump, seems to be benched because of this subpoena. Chris, what exactly do you think the House wants to talk to her about?
I think they want to talk to her about abusing the power that you have. The one thing you don't need is to take your powers and abuse them because people don't understand the following. People forget that they are public servants. And this gets lost in translation because people have their own agendas, their own empowerment, how to enrich themselves. This goes both sides of the aisle, but this whole thing with Kellyanne Conway, they want to break down her job responsibilities and how she's abusing them.
Well, the thing is we usually have the Department of Justice look into these things, turn over a report to the White House, and the White House is supposed to, through the president's discretion and the chief of staff, they are supposed to self-regulate if there's any violators of the Hatch Amendment or the Hatch Act. But the thing is Trump was told a month ago that she was in violation and his response was basically F off. Is there any chance that this subpoena will actually force some effort when it comes to Conway's position?
It goes back to what I said about abusing power, whether it's the president and the people who work for him. So it galvanizes and reinforces the fact that you may not take this seriously, but this is very serious that you're doing here. And a person can only get the message so far if you tell the president, look, you must inform Kellyanne Conway that she is in violation of the Hatch Act, and you say, okay, F off. I mean, what more can you do? You have to go forward and say, okay, Mr. President, we'll try this again. Let's subpoena her and get our message across. This is what I mean by the pushback that happens with whether it's the House and the Senate and the president, the behavior pattern, this feeling that no matter what the president does, he feels attacked and he can go above the law and everything is, everybody should, I guess, you know, dictatorship and bow down to him. No, that's not how this works. That's not how it works, Mr. President.
No, but he really badly wants it to work that way, because the thing with Kellyanne Conway is, one, boy, her husband, not a fan, but Kellyanne Conway has been the best mouthpiece in Donald Trump's mind, and losing her could cost him a lot. He's almost concerned that losing her voice could cost him 2020. Chris, we got to take a break. When we get back, we've got to talk about a shooting that happened in South Bend, Pete Buttigieg as a presidential figure. Oh, and Sarah Sanders is having a party. I'm sure it'll be fun. We'll talk about that and more up next. This is Shaggy Jiggit Show.
Get informed. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Live from our studio out here in beautiful Pukalani, Hawaii. Aloha and welcome back. In case you missed any part of the first part of our show, don't forget, we're on Spotify, iHeartMedia, and everywhere else. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Joining me from the recently legalized state of Illinois, the first in our nation, which is probably going to set up a federal debate many weeks to come, please welcome Mr. Straight Edge Information himself, Chris Bates.
Thank you, Shaggy. I welcome myself back into your program.
Ah, yes. And I welcome you back to the, what we like to call, S-Storm of American News.
That's right.
Speaking of storms of actual fecal matter, Sarah Sanders has resigned as press secretary. Did anybody notice first?
Yeah, because she wasn't there. That was a big gaping hole. I've been on record from day one about my disdain for Sarah Sanders. Like most people, you know, you try to give them a fair shot and see what happens in their job description. But for me, over the time, to her credit, she's the recent one that's held it the longest from her predecessors. So you give her credit for that. But from the standpoint of how she comported herself, how she was very mean-spirited, I just didn't care for that, me personally. And I just said from day one, she cannot do the job. She couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that, it could have been a lot of factors. One, not having the background or the skill set to do that, combined with the fact that you're only given a limited amount of information when you're doing a job like that. So remember, her go-to line was, you know, go to the president's outside counsel, was a go-to line. She didn't know anything. And so never in my time of watching a White House press secretary do what she did, it was embarrassing, because the predecessor before, or even years under different administrations, did not behave this way. It wasn't as adversarial. It was, yeah, you get upset. Everybody's human. That happens. But you have a job to do, and so does the press corps. So when you say things like, I think what did it for me was they were talking about the border control and children in cages. And one of the reporters has said, and he tried to appeal to her nature as a mother. He said, Sarah, you're a parent. You don't feel any compassion? And she was like, you know, pretty much, sit down. I don't just want some camera time. I'm not going to get it. again, at that point, I was like, I can't.
You know,
you're just a vile person.
The thing that really got me is this, is when Sarah Sanders went forward in front of the press. Now, keep in mind, the longest stretch of no press conference from the White House press room, the longest stretch ever in recorded history, is happening right now with Sarah Sanders. The longest stretch ever since the time of Washington up. This is since that office was created. This is the longest delay. Now, the thing about that is before that delay, it seemed like, and I'm just going to throw this out here, it seemed like she was getting a little stretched at the truth. The things that she was having to say the last time that she was in front of the press was so far gone. I think that that's actually what's causing her to retire, to say this mistrust and this dishonesty, this might be a bridge too far for me to recover from. What do you think?
Well, it could be some form of, obviously I'm no doctor, I don't play one on the radio or any type of TV, but if I would take a guess, it could have some stress on you, obviously. To be in a position, one of the most high profile positions in the government, and you are forced to lie, or that's what you want to do in the first place. I'm not in her head, nor do I want to be, but I'm going a different route. The pressure to go out there daily, Monday through Friday, to talk to the people and the nation and beyond. And you're standing there trying to make sense of the daily notes, and you get all these bombardment of questions, and you can't answer them. So you got to figure, you can't wait to get out of there to probably go decompress and get out of your system and then start the holding all over again the next morning. When you are on that type of pressure pattern, you can only take so much. And then if you notice, they stopped having it daily, and they had like, okay, we'll do it when we feel like it. Mm-hmm. So one day during the week, it becomes on a Wednesday, next week on a Tuesday, and kind of spurring through there, because apparently it got to a point where nothing was getting done. When you make enemies of, say, for example, go back to CNN's Jim Acosta and April Ryan, and again, people can make their own detail. I just saw reporters asking questions because that was their job. And going back to Sanders, she could not handle the pressure and went at them personally as well. And so believing the fact that you can't do this job, now you're not come out and say, I can't do this job. Nobody's going to admit that. But I think people watching and listening and seeing how upset she would get had to say, no, but something's wrong somewhere. And it became segmented. I said before, whenever the White House felt like on the press conference, and it just became a destruction.
Well, the thing that really gets me is that she was an active participant in Trump's war against a free press. Let's not forget, it was Sarah Sanders who said that Jim Acosta from CNN actually accosted, see what I did there? Accosted a White House staffer during a presser where he karate chopped her arm. Now, it was later found out that InfoWars, Alex Jones' whole group, helped Sarah edit and distribute that video. And when confronted with the actual dishonesty of said video, Sarah did not relent. So she was very comfortable, I think, Chris, in maintaining the lie. Would you say that that's one of her best job qualifications?
Yes. She did a very excellent job to keep the lie going, to stretch it, to bend it, to karate chop it, to whatever it takes to go out there on a daily basis to do said event. And again, when you have people just trying to ask questions, and even if you're a novice when it comes to government and politics, you sit back and watch these pressers, you know, on CNN, on MSNBC, or even on a Fox News channel. When you look at these people, again, ask these questions, and it is your job to answer to the best of your ability. But when you have no ability and you can't answer it, where do you go from there? And that's what happened to Sanders. She just cannot do it.
No. Now, here's the thing, too, is because Sarah has been kind of in the shadows of Donald Trump during some of his rallies, and he's made certain hints about her next political step, which she promptly roll her eyes to. And time again, it seems like he's trying to say, hey, we're going to have this great big party for you. Everyone's going to be there. And then you're going to be the governor of Arkansas. Point of fact, do you think that Sarah Sanders' going away party is going to be that well attended?
No. No, I don't think so. I think that the press corps over time got to a point where, you know, I just don't like you. And not a matter of like, but it's a matter of also professionalism. I mean, you'd be nice if you, you know, like somebody, or even if you didn't, just have a quorum of professionalism. And she didn't do that. She just, would, as you said, roll her eyes, have an attitude. And I would say that if she was working for a Republican or Democrat president, that's just not great or good behavior for her to have maintained that the time that she did. But again, when your supervisor or your boss, being the president, is co-signing on your behavior and not check you saying you shouldn't do things like that, pretty much probably saying, that's good, go get them, and pushing that direction, then you have no guidance. Your guidance is wrong because you're coming off as someone who is trying to deflect the job at hand, and again, it's an embarrassment. I saw it as an embarrassment, really.
Now, this is the thing, because I gotta move on to the South Bend story, but I want to end this Sarah Huckabee Sanders on one interesting quote. When she found out about the actual announced resignation of Sarah Sanders, she was on a plane, and April Ryan decided to weigh in on this whole situation, basically saying that Sarah Sanders was complicit in lying. She was complicit in being attackful of a free and open press. And she has used slander and libelous behavior to make sure that the press seems like the enemy. And at the end of her video, this is the best thing. Chris, I think Washington, D.C. agrees with April Ryan when collectively Sarah Sanders leaves town, everybody's just going to say, girl, bye. What do you think?
I concur wholeheartedly. I can only imagine what it was like in that presser and press corps to work with someone who is not being cooperative. And again, it just makes the job harder if you're a part of the press to do that. And it should have been a give and take. I mean, over the years, once again, you have bad days. Even going back to Sam Donaldson, you know, working for ABC, where he would press the president, then Ronald Reagan, about certain things, but it was his job to. And Ronald Reagan may not care for Sam Donaldson for ABC, but that was Sam's job. So when you fast forward down the road with how Sarah Sanders was with the press corps, it just love to hate, you know, very hatred, you know, behind. And that's what I caught from. It didn't have to be that way. Mm-mm. Not at all.
No. So, girl, bye.
Exactly. There you go.
So here's an interesting story. Pete Buttigieg, who has been in the news as of lately, saying some pretty exciting things for people on the Democratic side, had a little bit of a bad week last week that continued into this week with the shooting death of one guy by the name of Eric Logan. Now, this guy was assaulted by a cop by the name of Officer Knepper, and of course, that shooting was found to contain some police brutality bias, as we call it. Chris, this week, the town of South Bend has said, you know what? We are not going to sit around and wait for IA. We're not going to wait for public opinion. They've requested a special prosecutor be appointed. I'm sorry, because in Hawaii, we only had, you know, Dog and his wife, Beth Chapman, as our sole law enforcement. If you watch the show Dog the Bounty Hunter, rest in peace, Beth. But for people that live in places with police brutality, appointing a special prosecutor is a pretty heavy thing when you skip the internal affairs, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, what you're doing is trying to get really obviously to the bottom of the whole thing and not have any type of biases situation. I saw the town meeting that Pete Buttigieg had with the townspeople there in South Bend, Indiana, and it was highly emotional, and rightfully so. for Eric Logan to be killed, quote unquote, by the shooting that happened on June 16th by South Bend Police Sergeant Ryan O'Neill. It does give you pause because you got to figure we know the name through the press of Eric Logan, but what about the people who don't get the press, who unfortunately have been shot by law enforcement? So there have been many names that we're not familiar with. And the townspeople there were emotionally charged because they're tired. And they're tired of certain, you know, favors or covering up certain things. It is a cover, quote unquote. I know it's alleged, but when you see, for example, a mother saying at the town hall, I have to tell my son, who's also African-American, to be careful of the police because of the history they have with the law enforcement in this town. Be careful. It's hard to trust somebody if the trust factor is not there. So we had the return order police who's obviously going to back O'Neill in this situation and saying, you know, that we take exception because we're trying to protect them, and pretty much this is what we're getting. Just paraphrase the whole statement that the Fraternal Order Police has had. The thing about it is, understand the cry of the people. They do not want to be shot and killed just by the way they look. And then to tell your children, you want to tell your children to trust the police, but they can't because a high percentage of African-American people getting shot and killed.
Yeah, now keep in mind, two terms ago when Pete Buttigieg took over as the mayor of South Bend, he had a very controversial moment when he had, at that time, fired the then police chief, a black officer. Now, that was seen already as a little turn towards the wrong in South Bend, and over the course of those two terms, we've seen officers of African descent drop from 26 on the force to 13. They make up less than 10% of the force. And with new people being brought into South Bend all the time, this O'Neill, this Nepper, this type of behavior with the racist language, the aggressive use of force and malfunctioning body cameras, this seemed to become more prevalent under Mayor Buttigieg's watch. So, Chris, I got to ask, is this his fault?
Well, under his watch, yeah. I don't blame for the whole thing because a lot of stuff happened before he became mayor. But because it's his time on his watch, you have to say, yes, it's his fault under his time being mayor. I do admire him for stopping his campaign to come back to South Bend to address the issue. I would have looked at him sideways if he did not. This is still your town. You still have to address these problems. I know the big goal is to run for the presidency, and he has started to be becoming a favorite. He would go from really unknown to now a person who has a shot for the presidency is really very impressive. But before he became a presidential candidate, you're still mayor there in South Bend, Indiana. So your allegiance had to be where you started from. So hopefully it's not just a show for the cameras or for the press saying, I care. I hope the man does actually care.
When it comes to special prosecutors, and this is kind of a neat little precedent that we need to talk about, because South Bend is going down this route where Cotter, who is their, he's the county prosecutor, Kenneth Cotter.
Right. Kenneth Cotter, right.
Yeah. So he's the one that is requesting the special prosecutor. And if he is able to start that in South Bend, there might be, across a bunch of other communities in the United States, an outcry for people to also engage in this behavior. And Chris, when it comes to police officers, this last 2 years, we have seen a surge in police brutality stories. Most people attribute that to, quote-unquote, a violent rise of white supremacy. But if you're in the know, it's really cell phones that change that perception, because this stuff has been happening for years. We just now have the ability to record.
No, No, you're absolutely right. When you look at the standpoint of before cell phones, it was always word of mouth. It was my word against the law enforcement's word. And a few times it became the word of the law enforcement and nothing got done. But now, since you have the proof there on your cell phone that a law enforcement officer commit these heinous acts towards citizens, now what can you say? I always say in court, it's what you can prove. But again, even having that, that could be manipulated through a jury, through prosecution sometimes, also through the fact of if you get the right players involved to manipulate again and to swing the side to protecting the officer if you're not careful. So all these benchmarks you have to fight, but at least with the cell phone videos, we're able to have more of a clear-cut view of these officers in their element, quote unquote, when they do these horrendous things.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing. Covering officers is one thing, and I we've got to leave this story or else we're going to run out of time for our next one. Covering officers is one thing, but here lately, we've had people actually kind of using the atmosphere of how cops have increased in brutality, how the country has become more violent itself. They've used that for their own fame, and that brings us to, there's been an update on the Jussie Smollett story, hasn't there?
Yes. As we last left Jussie Smollett, the case was closed, sealed, never to be heard from again. Now there's been 70 hours of videotape that has come forward to the press to show what happened from the body cam perspective of the Chicago Police Department when they went to his house on January 29th to his apartment. And this report I saw on ABC News here in Chicago, ABC 7. And I'm sorry, it's laughable. When they walk in with the body cams on, they go into the apartment, Mr. Smollett has the noose around his neck still after calling the police. Now, you would think that being traumatized, like you said, would take the, you know, noose off your neck and try to find some way to compose yourself. He said, I'll keep it on because I thought you wanted to see it.
Yeah, I look. That's the thing that gets me, because Jussie Smollett, when the story first came out, of course, ooh, it had all of the right elements. Some very racist, pro-MAGA hat-wearing white supremacist that happened to be black and Ethiopian. I don't know how that worked. But they attacked him.
Right.
On the streets. They also hung a noose around his neck and told him, this is Trump country now. I hate to admit this, but I'm from the South. I have seen the reaction of a person of color confronting a noose. That is like, you know how white women hate spiders landing on them in weird and mysterious places at odd times?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you feel towards a noose. It is not something you want near you. You don't want touching you. That thing burns your skin. It is very, very frightening to be around one. The fact that he was wearing it like, you know, Flava Flav's clock did leave some sort of question of what was going on. And as such, I kind of got to ask, now that we've went from case closed to, well, let's release all these videos, Chris, is there any chance anybody anywhere will ever hire this guy again?
No. No, his career has been done since this whole thing got into play. And when you look at the ramification that's happened, let's go back to the whole investigation. You're talking about over 12 detectives that was hired for this. And not only that, the man and woman hours put into this case because it was a lie from the beginning. And that's a colossal waste of time. In any metropolitan city, or county, whatever, those hours could have went to some real crimes to be investigated. And for one man like Jussie Smollett to just lie for whatever reason, a contract going back to Fox on the show Empire, whatever, it didn't have to be. And to go on network television to Robin Roberts on the Morning America's ABC morning program and to say this is the truth, start to cry, and the people say, look how emotional he is. Well, he is an actor. You know, he does get paid to do that. So when you look at the whole timetable and we get to that point where I was just shocked at the time that the case was sealed, How does that happen? Why is it sealed? Why is everybody protecting this man? So I hate to say it's the gift that keeps on giving if you're a person in the media that has to do stories like I do and you do and everybody else does and does talk radio. It won't go away because it doesn't have a complete ending. That false ending we got by it being closed was just temporary. The 70 hours of videotape definitely shows him in a different light, in the light that all of us said from the beginning, they're on the same page, that he lied from day one.
Well, this is the thing that kind of bothers me about the Smollett story, and I'm going to ask your opinion on this because this is one of those things that we have to consider is a precedent-setting action for bad things in our country. Chris, when somebody like a celebrity, a Jussie Smollett, talks about, I was attacked, I was this, I was that, and it was all this specific group of people that did it. When he's found out to be a liar, did Smollett's case actually empower Caucasians in America to say things like, see, minority crime is a myth. They make it all up for the attention. It's all a lie because if he lies, they're all lying. Does that set a dangerous precedent?
It does. So you don't think about the consequence of your action and how it magnifies to other parts of life and how people think about you and how people think about that in general. The people, the naysayers who say that that type of crime is a lie will definitely feed into it. Say, see, this is the example we're talking about. This man lied. It doesn't exist. Yes, it does exist. We didn't want this narrative well to be a spokesperson for us, and he's not. But the fact that he did all this gives a justification to so-called, I guess, win their quote-unquote argument. But really, it doesn't. It really, what Jussie Smollett has done, in my humble opinion, has taken a very serious thing like the history of hanging people in this country and using it for whatever stage or production that he created into his own narrative is very embarrassing, and he should have known better.
Well, I mean, when you can look through history books and see pictures of the ACLU office in New York City with a big black flag and white letters in front of it saying a man was lynched yesterday, because at one point of our country, people of color just ended up in trees. We just thought it was something that happened because lynching was so commonplace. So the fact that he uses that type of action is almost very specific. And I'm just going to say this because we've got like a minute left here. Chris, I think when he goes that specific, he's actually delegitimizing cases like Michael Brown. And that's going to be dangerous for all of us. Am I right?
And you're right. It goes back to Genesis 6 that happened all those years ago with the nooses being found in trees and on doorknobs and colleges and everything else. It goes back to that. You can't say that didn't happen because it did. But what you did to whoever trying to justify your story is an insult to the people who have been lynched and killed and hanged.
Yep. And that's our show for this week. See you next one. Love you, mean it.